Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Young. Each week, we'll be interviewing someone from the blockchain industry to learn more about this fast-moving cryptocurrency economy. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The CoinGecko podcast is produced each week to help you stay ahead of the curve. Show notes can be found at podcast.coingecko.com. I highly encourage you to join our newsletter where we send out top news in the crypto industry every Monday to Friday. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter and Telegram at CoinGecko. Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. For today's episode, let's welcome Dr. Omri Ross, Chief Blockchain Scientist at eToro. Dr. Ross earned his PhD in Mathematical Finance from the University of Cambridge. He currently holds an assistant professorship in blockchain technology at the Department of Computer Science at the University of Copenhagen. Dr. Ross has acted as an advisor, consulting with governments, banks, blockchain startups, and larger corporations, and is a sought-after speaker on all topics related to decentralized financial infrastructure. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ross.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, Bobby.
For the first question, we would like to know a little bit about your personal story. When did you first hear about Bitcoin, and what got you to move full-time into this industry?
Yeah, I guess it's been a bit of a long process for me. I mean, I got to hear about it a little bit in 2011, 2012. But again, I think I got more interested in it actually around the time of the work around colored coins that I followed from Yoni and other members of the industry, of course, Vitalik and Colored Guys. Yeah, I guess at that time, I really see it as a very, very sort of interesting sideline, but not something that serious because I couldn't see how scalability can happen into the system. But I think when Ethereum went out, that's when I really wanted to move full-time.
You are now with eToro as the Chief Blockchain Scientist. That's a very big title. Tell us about what you do at eToro and tell us more about how you joined the eToro team from Fermo.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, I think there were a lot of alignments between the vision that we had sort of in Fermo and, of course, the much bigger vision that eToro is having, right? eToro's vision is to open global markets for everyone in a simple and transparent manner. And they executed very well on top of it. And we felt that we could actually contribute to that in offering another line of secure products, which are much more tokenized and working around the blockchain. We knew about the vision of eToro team and Yoni and others for a long time, and we collaborated with them. So it was very, very natural for us. What we do is we work a lot on the sort of the pipeline of some existing projects, as well as a very sort of long ahead sort of planning project and lab projects that may or may never materialize. So it's a lot of fun. And I think eToro is a great place because on one hand, it's quite of a large company, at least within the Fermo, sort of between the crypto space. But on the other hand, it much acts like a startup. It's still a large company. Decisions are taken down and made by different members of the team, and it is able to move much faster than many other large corporations, which is really, really cool to try and rewriting finance together with them.
I had an earlier conversation with you, and you told me about how eToro CEO, Yoni Asia, is a big believer in blockchain technology, even from the early days. Do you want to share a little bit more about Yoni's beliefs and vision in the blockchain industry?
Yeah, so of course, first I would like to invite Yoni to one of these podcasts. He can probably tell much better than me about himself. But I think Yoni's belief in transparency and financial market as being long going. I mean, if you look at the early days of his work on colored coin, it's a good example of actually looking into ways to make financial markets way more transparent. And again, it's very, very much aligned with opening the market in a simple way and transparent to everybody, which is eToro's vision. So in that regard, I think the technology by itself was very appealing for Yoni from early stages. And as these things grows, it's been very fundamental for him that we'll be both thought leaders and first movers within this market.
You started looking at tokenization even from the early days of the colored coin days. How has things changed since then? It seems like Ethereum is the one platform that is really fulfilling this vision of tokens everywhere.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think if you look at the early days, while it was much more a bunch of people looking into some crazy ideas, which are more far away from the sort of financial services. And I think with the growth of Ethereum, it at least came a, I don't know if it's a camouflage or a feeling that we can get much faster to offer some of the vision of tokenization of assets, right? Which is the main reason behind ideas such as ColoredCoin and platforms such as Ethereum made it much more easy and possible to do things and interact with them and to build smart contracts that can interact between these contracts. And a lot of people really like that vision, including myself, because it allows us to create a composable contract, right? So what it means is that you can actually build building blocks that's going to interact directly with each other. And that's, in my opinion, one of the biggest contribution of Ethereum, because it's make it much more easy or possible to people to create base layers, whether they are decentralized finance layers, projects like MakerDAO, or to some extent, money market accounts like Compound, which are easily integrated into much more complicated applications. Now, if we look back into the financial sectors, transactions are complicated. Of course, they are easy and fast moving, but they require usually working with a bunch of collaborators. Maybe each transaction has some complex meanings within paying agents, card companies, as well as payment providers. But eventually they know to do one thing, and they're not very flexible. You need to have a terminal that works with some specific protocols in a variety of places. And this technology can actually allow you to decompose much richer sets of events and will lead to much richer sets of value proposition. On the other hand, one of the biggest challenges with this is, which we've been talking about a lot, is issues around scalability and fit to market and regulation, which means we would love to see a real large-scale financial sector runs on a platform like Ethereum, but it doesn't seem super likely today, at least without good scaling solution via issues as Lightning, if will be provided there, or issues such as second-layer blockchains, because without that, it will be very hard to work on the same level of throughput as we've seen with the financial sectors, right? We want to be able to run transaction immediately that will be applied. We want to do it in a secure manner, which is difficult in systems without any centralized party that can actually deal with misalignment and with theft and issues like that. And you need to add into it insurance companies. You need to add some regulation inside. So I think Ethereum is a good start and is an amazing platform, and I'm a huge fan. But I think we need to see a lot of scalability within this ecosystem to be able to really predict who will be the winners on the longer term.
Yeah, I think what you said is really true. I think Ethereum is suffering from a big scalability issue. Every time there's a huge change, increase or decrease in price, the Ethereum network goes into a massive bottleneck, and then every transaction takes a long time to proceed. That's definitely a bad thing. Do you see anything that can be done to improve Ethereum scalability in the short, medium, and long term?
It's a great question. And I have to say that I think the foundation is actually, and a lot of other providers are doing a really good job about it. And of course, we're all waiting to ETH 2.0 to see how hopefully some of these problems are going to be less acute than they are today. But I think I would not expect only Ethereum and the foundation to deal with it. I think that we will have a place for several service providers, for several blockchain, for different use cases. And I would think it's not even fully fair to put all the weight on Ethereum, because the way I look at Ethereum is an absolutely amazing project, right? It's a startup idea, raising some funding in the past, building a product no one, and including myself actually, believe will be that well executed, right? They actually built an EVM virtual machine that works on blockchain and actually made it happen. For me, it's tremendous, right? And I feel I'm either underscaling that, and they've done well in building an ecosystem around it. And I think for their point of view, doing an ICO as they did was creating more engagement from the community. So it was a really amazing product. However, to assume that this would be the last product, it's hard to say. I think what stands good for Ethereum is the fact that there are some systems that work on it that may create legacy. And while we look a lot at legacy as a negative thing, if there will be systems that are already based on Ethereum today, they may have a hard time to move for other platforms. So I think what we will see is we'll see much more sort of scaling short-term solution, like layer two solutions or possibly issues like Plasma that's going to offer us much better scalability. But what I think will be much more interesting and something that will play much more on the long term will be to really enjoy fundamentally seeing dedicated blockchain for dedicated issues. And I think that will be a very, very interesting part that I think will happen. I think there are another very, very interesting aspect that we're not maybe speaking enough about is really issues around regulation. Because integration of regulation will really allow us to onboard much more attention towards the blockchain world. And onboarding that attention and onboarding the traditional providers can actually allow sort of this setup on ecosystem of blockchain to be moved away from a bunch of geeks working with it for many years and talking about changing toward to much larger scale adoption. And will also allow us to build much stronger ecosystem. I think in doing that, the really hard part would be to be able to see what can we imitate or how can we actually restrict some of the powers that blockchain system have. For example, right, we cannot reverse transactions, which is, of course, a key value within the system. However, that means that insurance become much more complicated on the blockchain, right? Because how do you insure against a transfer or let's call it wrong transfer of money if you cannot really revert it in any other sense? There are a lot of work on really connecting the more traditional players to get to feel and work with this technology. But I think that that's what we're going to see happening in the next 10, 20 years, or even 5, 10 years.
Yeah, you brought up two very interesting points on the use of different blockchains for different things and also on regulations. So how do you see regulators regulating blockchain and the decentralized nature of it obviously makes it really hard to do that?
It's an excellent question. And I think the way regulators will look into it is probably gradually and probably different in different jurisdictions. And while everybody, of course, want to initially work with the largest jurisdictions, such as the US, for example, it's not that simple to move there fast. We have seen the German regulation become really open into Bitcoins just and generally digital assets just recently, which is an excellent step. We live in Denmark, and we've seen that the regulators here have at least been talking and engaging in discussions and are opening different sandbox models. So I think they will move ahead and do it cautiously, like they should as regulators. I think the hard stuff from people like us that are being in this industry and are full-time crypto, as you asked me before, is that we are would, of course, like that to happen way faster. But I think it's a little bit difficult because we're talking about a new technology. We're talking about, in the end, regulation supposed to really look at the interests of everyone and every actor in the society. And they are naturally exposed mainly to the downside, right? Opening, making, allowing something to work and it doesn't work and being criticized for it. While if there is success stories, then the entrepreneurs behind the success stories are much more benefiting and describing it. So I think we have to be very, very patient. And I think we have to spend time talking to them and discussing with them and building focus where for us at eToro, we have many members that are actually engaged with different elements of the regulators from us through our core business regulating it and from eToroX, sort of the exchange or the professional part of the business, engaging with the regulators on tokenization of assets and a vast other topics. But we're also working on it as part of sort of thought leadership, as part of engaging with contributing to an academic discussion about the usability of this technology and publishing papers around it, which is another way to contribute to that discussion. But it's a long-term one. It's not a short one, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's definitely a long-term game when you want to educate regulators because they first have to understand it comprehensively and know every angle before they can make a decision on what laws to put in place. Next question is, how do you think blockchain will change the future of finance? How will the banks of the future look like?
This is maybe my favorite question because what brought me real full-time to blockchain is that understanding that I totally believe that blockchain will become sort of the rails where financial services are going to build up. Because of all the qualities we talked about before, the quality of being able to create decomposition and composable smart contracts will allow each service to naturally connect to other service. Now, that may sound like a geeky discussion of a very, very specific item, but that means really opening any service to anybody and possibly offering that service in a full transparent manner between smart contracts, between auditable code that people can actually see and examine. What it also means is that with current encryption technology, we can allow very, it's not that easily, but it's not that complicated as well. And we looked into it as well, how you can keep this information private. So we can actually run private transactions on blockchains and keeping them private. And with a variety of rather simple mechanisms, such as, for example, Shamir's secret sharing or more complicated sort of MPC models, we can allow the players in this ecosystem to mutually and together agree when a specific transaction information should be revealed and information should be revealed. So why is it, in my opinion, so strong? It's because I'm looking a lot into how financial services work today. Say there is a transaction that happened and we want to examine it. First of all, the regulator is not seeing that transaction as it happened live, right? It runs between two banks or two institutions, and they will at some point receive information about this transaction. At some point, we'll examine this transaction, probably in a much later stage. And we are talking now with this technology of offering sort of real-time monitoring of transaction and events happening, being able to sort of algorithmically agree when a transaction, let's say, doesn't look so kosher or so legit, and being able to decompose it, being able to offer services built on top of each other, which will open this market to much more competition. And then in the end, which is maybe where a lot of the blockchain work I would love to see, is getting that all things in a simple manner to everybody. So again, simply providing people a simple service such as payments, such as a transfer, in a very clear client experience, and at the same time, backend with sort of complicated technology that offers us much more transparency. So I think we can get much contribution to transparency, decomposition, and I think these are values that I personally adhere and things are really great for the financial services.
Very interesting indeed. And how do you see eToro fulfilling this vision of the future of finance?
I think eToro is very strategically located within this. Because of Yoni's love to this area, which was a composition in projects like Good Dollar and composition into concept about opening financial markets for everybody, we've seen a large player within the financial sort of sector, which thoroughly and believes within the potential of blockchain, which means one of the things I love best about my job is that I can actually come with an idea. And I would assume that I would get quite a lot of support from eToro and from its leadership on actually pursuing it. If we can think about it, for example, if I was working with other large financial actor and I would like to come with building a very strong system on blockchain technology, there will be so many restrictions and a hard time to actually go to market with it. While with eToro, for example, we build our tokenized assets and we provide 17 of those, 15 FX and 2 gold and silver, so 2 commodities. And we build this product and we get a full support from the back end of the organization. As we often quote them by saying that we think the biggest transfer of wealth will be really transferring a lot of the, I wouldn't call it all, but traditional wealth towards the blockchain. And that will be an interesting part. And eToro, I feel, is located really well to do it because it's deeply rooted within the financial sector by being regulated, by working with the largest bank in the industry, by running large transaction value of, say, over $1 trillion a year, including large part of it being around stocks, around commodities, around traditional market, and at the same time, being highly vested into the blockchain, understanding technology, having a CEO that really understand and read about this technology and wanting to push it, would be able to possibly make us sort of the glue that connects all the new world. And doing that by offering clients a very simple and transparent sort of setup to trade.
You are also an author of the Bancor white paper. Can you summarize in simple terms what Bancor is and how is a new model for decentralized exchanges for those who are not familiar with it?
Sure. I mean, I think, I won't talk much into that. But what I find interesting about the Bancor idea, and generally what I would call in a more general manner swap exchanges, is that the first thing that we've seen when people moved to a world of decentralized exchanges was trying to build different ways to sort of imitate the old world, right? You have, in the old world, you have an exchange, you're trying to sell some assets, you're trying to build some book, bid and ask, people trying to offer different services and sell them and trade. And we also have seen that projects like ZeroX and others actually build around providing different interfaces to allow you to do it. I won't get into details into that. This could be another interview. We may follow at some point around how decentralized exchanges works. But in very short term, what I liked about the swap idea is that you build a bonding curve about how the relative prices of two assets work, and you suddenly build a new product. That's what excited me. It wasn't possible before. Being able to swap two tokens and see the price change of it, while it has some price deficiencies, and among other things, I'll publish an academic paper that we're working on to actually describe much more of these mechanisms from a much more theoretical and game theoretical perspective. I think that it's something that we couldn't do before. A contract that trades directly with itself and provides inherent liquidity that already exists without inside the contract, for me, is a new animal that didn't exist in traditional market. I think it's a bit early to figure out all the use cases. Some of them could be offering liquidity for more liquid assets. But what really caught my attention into that was building a mechanism that can actually offer liquidity in a way that wasn't known or possible in the more traditional world. And then I work on more academically on trying to see how you can actually build on top of these things. And, you know, we've seen Uniswap and we've seen a bunch of other players building around it. So I think it's very interesting.
Were you the first person to come up with this concept of the bonding curve and the automated market making through Banco, or did someone came up with the idea first and you sort of got inspired and wrote the Banco white paper based on that?
Right. So first, I got introduced to this paper and the ideas after it was started, worked into that. So I've seen some of the work, the early team, Fayal and others and many that build different part of the product. So I'm actually not sure who is the person that should be attributed the main ideas. What I do remember is that I was very intrigued by it. And I felt that the initial approach to describe it was very business-like, which may or may not be a good thing. It's not that. But I was really intrigued by the idea of contract trading itself. So I worked on developing some part of the use case. And in the second version, I'm making it much more sort of academically than it was in the first
one. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting thing. Like a lot of things, this automated market making, bonding curve, is something that cannot be done in the traditional world. And it's something only inherent in the blockchain space. And sometimes people make the mistakes of trying to replicate things that happen in the traditional or in the offline world and bring it online. It doesn't really work. And the same thing we are seeing, some people try to take what works in a traditional market and try to replicate it in the decentralized market. What we really need is a new way of thinking, because technology allows us for new ways of doing things. And I think what the work that you did at Banco is this blockchain native way of having a contract trading among itself to provide liquidity. So yeah, kudos to you for working on that, I would say.
First, I agree with you. I agree with you on the mention that you start by, you need to build new stuff. And that's where I'm getting excited about the composability, about smart contracts, if I would speak about it in a more sort of philosophical element. However, it's very natural that you first imitate old things in new things, right? And when we do research in general, this is usually the first place you start. You start by saying, okay, how this one new thing, new technology, how would an old feature look on that? And then you start with that, and then later on you start questioning different parts of your design, and that's where it's getting really creative and fun.
Yeah. I remember one of the earliest decentralized exchanges that was out, EtherDelta, was basically a replication of a traditional exchange with order books and all. But it was such a bad user experience. It was expensive and it was just very clunky way of doing things. And the Banco, the Uniswap way of having a bonded curve just makes it really simple to trade and provide liquidity for many of these assets, I would say.
Yeah. And as you know, I sit in two roles. One is more academic, as a sort of my work in university, which I enjoy thoroughly. And one is more sort of pragmatic, which is the work with eToro. So in each case, wherever I sit, I would look as an extremist. So if I work with my academic counterpart, I'm like, let's connect our work towards affecting true industry, financial sector, and build the rails there. And when I sit with my eToro counterparts, I'm like, let's build the vision for 5-10 years ahead and not build things which are going to make a difference in the long-term longevity of the company. But I think this connectivity is really interesting. And it's really where I feel that I can try to help this industry in growing. But, you know, I think my belief in this industry is really, really deep. And this is where one of the things I learned from sort of eToro on the ties is also about the importance about regulation, about the importance of being part of growing that sort of discussion. For example, in the UK team, they're leading the crypto task force and advise governments and working directly with sort of getting the regulation and the environment much more engaged into our work, into our life. And I think that's generates a lot of long-term value.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think like professors that work in the industry has a lot of industry experience, be able to better contribute on its academic work instead of just staying purely in academia. So actually, I'd like to ask you a little bit on your work in the academia now. You lead the Financial Transparency Group Research Center at the University of Copenhagen. Can you share what are some of the initiatives that you guys are working on?
Sure. First, before that, the reason why I started the Financial Transparency Group was very related to what I discussed before, because I thoroughly believe that both the industry and the academia should work much closer to each other and can achieve much greater goals in greater collaboration. And the Financial Transparency Group is really around that. It's around building some deep research on core questions, but really work with industry leaders on establishing what are the core questions to explore over the next 5 and 10 years. And some of these questions that we come up with and we're working on are then leading to some grants that we are applying for and establishing, and some PhDs and some other work on it. And also, if you look into the group itself, it's very diversified. So there are members from economics department, from computer science department, and as well as members from business school and maybe more soft disciplines. And part of the thing that we try to establish there is to actually and build more than just a more initial prototype. Example of such collaboration could be an innovation project we work with eToro that is called Lyra. It's an open source language for DeFi. It's a language you can build on top of it financial contracts and execute them on a blockchain. There are a lot of technicalities in it. It's a domain-specific language. Part of the language has been formally verified on different features. So there are a lot of work on that has been fairly deep sort of academically, but we're also very keen about not just leaving it on the paper-wise, but also allowing people to play around with it and try it. And we did it by also building a demo where people can now create sort of options and future contracts and that, as well as open sourcing it completely and sharing some code examples on how you build it and show people how you can utilize it for a variety of contracts. So I think this sort of view of both building the core research question of designing a language and building it on one hand, which is a lot of time very academical and much work in publishing it, and then later on pursuing it, building it, and sharing it with the industry and try and get some more engagement and feedback from them is what we're trying to build. And we do it across other projects. So that's an example of a problem we work with. Another issue that we're very interested in is really, I'm a keen contributor and a fan of the words of stablecoin. I don't actually like the word stablecoin. I prefer to call it tokenized assets because this is what you do. But I think that what we've seen in the early versions and some of the great work that has been done there by you know, by corporation like Maker and DAI and others is building infrastructure, but this infrastructure doesn't relate directly to regulation. And I think there are two reasons why early work has been this way, partly because it's very difficult to work directly with regulators and it takes a long time and it's hard for startup and for innovative people to spend the time and build it. And secondly, there were a lot of discussion about the fact that regulation is often somehow, while it is doing a good way in protecting people, but it also doesn't allow people to use product. And in the spirit of free choice, and so people would like to be able to you know, both control their assets by tokenizing them, as well as trade them, transfer them, build stuff with them freely without kind of asking the big brother to approve or not approve that. And I get that one as well. But I think we can really achieve somewhat both goals at once if we build systems which are based on transaction on stablecoins, which will offer a layer of encryption on top of it, a layer of preventing the usability of some of these transactions information while still exposing them on a public ledger. Why do I say it? Because exposing this transaction on a public ledger means everybody can see that. It means this is transparent and you have no reason to sort of not show us the way things are working. On the other hand, with some smart encryption and decryption, you can actually live monitor when bad actions are happening. And I think then we really start building using blockchain technology as the rail of financial assets and the rail of the future of finance, rather than focusing on the price of Bitcoin, right? And I think that's where I'm getting excited, and that's an example of some of the projects we're working on.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up stablecoin. I think stablecoin is the sector that do have a lot of innovation in years to come. At this point in time, a lot of the stablecoins are mainly centralized IOU stablecoins like Tether, USDC, Paxos. And then you have the other extreme, which is the crypto collateralized stablecoins like DAI. But there was one type of stablecoin which was that did not come to life, which was the algorithmic stablecoin such as Basis. I'm sure you have studied it, but it was unfortunate that the team decided to pull off their project due to regulations. But if it would have come out, it would be very interesting to see that come to life, to see how they maintain the pack using algorithms.
I think it was fascinating. So I followed Basis. And I think the closest thing that now is alive is Stellar, which is somehow related to that.
Do you write any academic papers? What are some of the research that you have done at the university?
Right. So, yeah, of course, there are different topics we are interested in. One of the topics we published on is using KYC on the blockchain, sort of reducing the cost of KYC. As currently, sort of regulator require each financial institution to repeat the same KYC process for any user and corporate users. Even though you may trade with Bank of America and with Citigroup, but they will still need to do a separate project with you. And obviously, I mean, for individuals, it's maybe a smaller challenge because you just give your passport and some basic KYC information. But for corporates, really building this KYC and looking into all of subsidiaries and all of your information and varieties of languages is really, really lengthy. It's very costly. It's preventing businesses. And for example, do you want to guess what is the average cost of KYC for the largest 1,000 banks in the world, financial institution?
I have no idea. I don't know, maybe $100 to KYC one person.
I meant more the yearly cost for the operation. And it's $60 million a year.
Oh,
and
wow.
This number doesn't include fines that are received for doing it wrongly and others. So we think if you're thinking about a large corporation, they're probably not only aware of one bank. They usually work with a few of them, at least, if not many of them. And then it would make sense to actually allow the bank somehow to share this information. And the reason why it was not done and created sort of a lot of costs for each individual banks is because they wouldn't like the process that one institution is providing sort of the KYC information and material. And then in case of a challenge, they will have to find another institution that may rely on institution one, and you have lack of clarity of the responsibilities. But some of this information of how you ran this transaction can easily be cleared on either a DLT, sort of a corporate blockchain, if you would like, or on a public blockchain, and provide that information and provide massive saving to the industry. So that's one example. Other work we're doing is around the economical mechanism. As I mentioned before, some can relate to how you build a different equilibrium on different trading products, issuing things that may relate to swap-based exchanges. Another work we're building is around, I mentioned it before, Lira, sort of a declarative language for financial derivatives and how to build it, we actually build it and share it, how to extend it, how to make it more useful. We also look into decentralized government, which is a subject that I really love and many people in our industry really likes.
Like DAO, I suppose?
Yeah, DAOs. So, and how do you build a centralized organization? I think it's always super fascinating, right? Because it's one of these concepts that everybody feel very positive about on one hand, but really to do it correctly is very difficult and to really initiate that. Yeah, we looked into work of, some of it is done together with eToro, like Good Dollar, trying to look into creating a global UBI, what would be the implication of that, how to build good and interesting product about it, issues such as how to build leverage in decentralized systems, which are very interesting. Actually, my background is math finance, so I worked a little bit with some questions like that. Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of fun. And but most of the concept, right, that we're working is really bridging AML, KYC, both regulation, but also both concept, which could be theoretical and computer science deep, and show how can we build new tools and hopefully support more innovation around that.
Very interesting indeed. And besides those research projects, like what are some of the items that you're working on for 2020?
So as I mentioned before, we also build a lot of products that may not materialize, but are actually part of our way to exploring and building the pave for the futures. And I guess peer-to-peer lending is very interesting around the DeFi world. We're looking into different protocols that will offer more financial transparencies. We're looking into how to work with leverage in a more decentralized infrastructure. We're looking into a project like Good Dollar, which I mentioned around the UBI and the universal basic income. And which is an interesting question, because you want to create an open system for everybody. The decision will be done by a mechanism such as a DAO. But you know that in the initial part of this project, this system will be fairly centralized and controlled by a few members of the community. So you need to build also systems that become more decentralized gradually. We're looking into this kind of example of problems. We also can't talk about all the projects we're involved with. However, we are very, very interested in working with more great members of the ecosystem. I think one of the biggest achievements of Ethereum is the unbelievable ecosystem of developers and builders. And, you know, now when you go to DEF CON, so many people are there and there's so much innovation. So we're very interested in working with people in this industry. I think when you take a company like eToro, right, a lot of people are aware of our main sort of line of work we're doing, but there are a lot of work that is done aside from our main products, which are sort of copy trading and copy portfolios and offering the popular investors. It's actually trying to work on establishing innovation with index, contributing to research, collaborating with research, with focus groups, being involved with regulators. And we're very interested in talking to people around this in this ecosystem and seeing how we can help also smaller projects in building towards more regulators elements. So some of the projects, of course, are more interested in the day-to-day, and we understand it, and when you want to open a product to be completely decentralized with no KYC, no AML, and that can be more challenging for us. But we were very interested in discussing about how to open products which could be more available for financial markets and offer it to vast majority of customers and more people by actually using this technology and regulation.
Very interesting, all the things that you do. Lastly, before we close off, if someone's interested to find out more about the work that you do, how can they follow you?
Oh, thank you very much. So, of course, you can sort of print my Twitter, I guess, and my sort of LinkedIn profile. I'm happy to contact anybody. Also, at the last Corona times, I'm trying to go for many of the bigger conferences around the year. We plan to go to Consensus and to Ethereal. I'll be presenting also at Ethereal. I guess it's going to be an online conference this time. So, you know, write to me in LinkedIn or others. I'm always interested to learn about new projects. Often, if I hear about it through a person that I work with and already interested in the past, it can easily get my attention. I think it should be pretty simple to reach people nowadays as the systems are much more open. You can use also my university email. We can engage with work on different layers. Both as part of there is in the financial transparency group, we have a variety of corporates which are taking part into it. A lot of other innovative projects we're working with, like Gas Station Network and many other products which are not maybe directly connected to what we're doing, but we think are going to contribute to the future of this space. So if you are a builder, please get in touch. If you are more a deep thinker, we have opportunities which are more related to research, PhDs and postdocs. But I should be easily meetable, at least online nowadays. Yeah, very excited to hear about new work in progress. And please share some of my information maybe in the comment area so people can get engaged directly.
Yeah, we'll add them in the show notes later on. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be on the CoinGecko podcast. We really had a lot of fun learning about the work that you do. It's been very enlightening, I would say.
Of course, it's been fun to talk to you, Bobby. And, you know, we love the work of CoinGecko and would love to contribute more and to help you if any way I can.
All right. Thank you very much once again.
All right, that wraps up the show. Thank you for listening to the CoinGecko podcast with Bobby. If you like our show and want to know more, check out podcast.coingecko.com or please leave us a review on iTunes. If you have any feedback, do drop us an email at hello@coingecko.com. Join us for more next week. See ya!
This podcast is provided as part of the overall information on cryptocurrency contained on our website, is for your general information only, and does not howsoever constitute any endorsement, financial or investment advice, nor any solicitation or offer of securities or other financial instruments. CoinGecko and the podcast presenter makes no warranties, implied or express, of any kind in relation to this podcast, including, without limitation, the accuracy and updatedness of its content. All opinions and recommendations therein the podcast are based on the personal opinion of the presenter. Please conduct your own research and procure professional advice should you, at your own risk, decide to howsoever invest or trade in relation to the content contained in the podcast.